Good evening again. Welcome to our March 15th, 2021 budget work session for fiscal year 22. Before we get started, I would like to read a letter of appreciation. Our librarian, Jen Gardner, and her husband, Patrick, are going to be moving away soon. And from the city of Gustavus and on behalf of the city council and staff, we wish you the greatest success as you embark on your next stop in your journey. Since joining the city council back in January of 2018, you have brought spirit, professionalism, and programs that enriched the community. With your leadership and teamwork, the programs of the library focused on and met the needs of the community. Your efforts to provide for those who felt isolated during this pandemic gave us respite during this difficult time. The activities provided for the youth and activities for the rest of us demonstrated your commitment to our town. The city council, staff, library volunteers, and interns wish you safe travels. Thank you very much, Jen. We will miss you greatly. Okay, and with that, I'm gonna go ahead and turn the meeting over to our city treasurer, Phoebe.
Thank you, good evening, everybody. And welcome to our most exciting time of the year, the budget process. Tom, did you have some opening remarks before we delve in?
Thanks, Phoebe. I just a brief overview of our process so far. Phoebe and I put together a rough draft of the budget for the mayor. When we do that, we look at trends, both of the city and of the state. We look at identified revenues that might be coming our way, such as the COVID relief package, or CARES Act, or any other revenue sources that have a good chance of coming to us during the fiscal year. And then we contact all the different departments and ask them what their needs are, get some input. We have a pretty good understanding as we have weekly meetings with departments, and they always are happy to tell us about needs that they might have. So we're able to put together a rough draft for the mayor to consider. We've been very fortunate over the last several years that we have been fairly accurate on our budgeting and actually have exceeded our calculations, and we usually have a carryover. Last year or this fiscal year has been somewhat of a wild card with COVID, but I think we've done really well. So it's a big attaboy to the council for keeping us on track and keeping our budget well within our allocations. We're at the process now where the council reviews the draft from the mayor, gives us input. We'll update that draft and have a town hall next Monday at 5:30. That's an opportunity for the public to comment on the budget, questions, concerns, different line items. And then we get that input, bring it back, make any adjustments that the mayor directs us to, and then if it's needed, we'll have another budget work session, or we'll hopefully introduce the budget in April so that we have a little time between April and June when we have the public hearing on the budget. That long space gives us an opportunity to make any final adjustments. If we get information from the feds, local businesses, the park, that gives us time to make adjustments before we adopt the budget. So that's our process. That's all I have, unless there's any questions on that.
Great. Thanks, Tom. I just want to do one quick correction. The town hall is not next Monday. It's in 2 weeks on March 29th at 5:30, not March 22nd. I hope that folks can join us for that. For tonight, I think what we'll do is just kind of go through the proposed budget line by line, and most of the categories will be pretty brief, and then there'll be other items that definitely will be up for more discussion. I'll just do that. And as I go, if it's hard for me to watch the hands raised as I'm going through, but so feel free to interrupt if people have questions as I go along here also. What you're looking at here is a comparison. It's to help to show trends over time. And so across the top here, it shows each column is representing a different fiscal year. And so beginning with fiscal year 17, and then all the way to the budget we're working on now, FY22, fiscal year 22. We have actual numbers for these four completed fiscal years, and we are just about 3/4 of the way through fiscal year 21, this column here. And this budget, the council created a very conservative budget with the pandemic looming over us. And so I've added in an actual numbers to date through last week, just to give some context for some of these numbers are higher or lower than we had projected in our very conservative budget last spring. So there's an extra column here. Both of these columns are fiscal year 21. This is the budget that was approved last April, or introduced last April, approved in June. And then these are the actual numbers so far through this fiscal year. And then these are the numbers that we're working on tonight to propose for the fiscal year that starts July 1st. So it starts off at the top here. We'll be going through the income lines for the city. And you can see the categories here on the left as we go through it. So I'll just start going down the list. For business license fees, we kept them the same as last year, which is a little lower than our actuals from prior years. So just being conservative. Donations is down, is a little bit lower. These are for library donations to more reflect what we've been bringing in. The DRC, this is our disposal and recycling center income. We did kind of moderate projections for this, not quite a full normal year, like was back here in a full fiscal year, normal fiscal year 19. And so it's a little more conservative than that, just with lodges and things being open, but maybe not at full capacity and things like that. So that has the community chest and landfill fees, and then our recycled material sales.
Phoebe, can I ask a question?
Yes, we have our, sure.
This is Tanya. Why are the landfill sales so much higher than past years? The fees and sales.
When we get our actual numbers, you have to combine these two rows. This is how it reports out in QuickBooks. And so it's been right around 76,000, 77,000. And we're projecting 69 for the budget for next year.
Okay, great. I didn't realize that. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, sorry about that. Thanks for catching that. Okay, so on to the next part here is our federal revenue. We have two categories here that we normally receive funds from, and then a third category here at the top, the COVID-19 relief. This is part of the Rescue America Plan, I think it's called, something like that, that was just signed on Thursday. And we do not have definitive numbers yet, and we do not know the timing of any dollars that we would receive yet, whether it would come in our current fiscal year we're in right now, or whether it will come in next year. Tom has received information from the Alaska Municipal League that it seems like funds that the city might receive would be similar to the calculations they use for the community assistance program that the state doles out, plus some adjustments here or there, and that they speculated that we might be eligible for, or might be receiving $99,000. There's also some, it sounds like in the bill, there's also possibly some funds for communities that have been, their tourism revenue has been impacted. And so basically this is kind of a wild card right now, and we'll know more information as this spring progresses. There's a Alaska Municipal League meeting that Tom and I will be listening in to tomorrow that might have some more insight, but we certainly should know more before, hopefully before the town hall and by the work session in April. So we put in a placeholder here for COVID-19 relief at what we're hearing the number might be is 99,000, but I've got it highlighted here that it might not be this, might not be fiscal year 22, it might be this fiscal year. We also aren't hearing whether or not there'd be restrictions on how that would be spent, similar to how the CARES Act had restrictions. So a lot of up in the air right now. So we're just putting in the best information we have for now. This next line is National Forest Receipts. These are funds that can only be used for roads and schools. And since the city does not operate the school, we just use our funds for roads. If you look at the trend over time, the last few years have been pretty similar, but the year before that, it had dropped to $5,000. So we're pretty gun shy about putting any value in here at all. And that's also, it works with the way we're doing our budget right now, because we're paying for all of our roads out of savings. And so whether we have a number here or not only is impacting what, how much we're pulling out of savings until we come up with a new plan for funding our road maintenance. In the past, our national forest receipts exceeded what we could spend on roads each year. And so excess funds were set aside in a dedicated savings account, since they can only be used on roads. And we have exhausted those funds. Since then, the funds received do not cover our annual road maintenance costs. So we've been drawing out these encumbered funds from savings to pay for the road maintenance. And we've now depleted those saved funds. And so everything else is coming out of a non-replenished savings account at this time until we address how we're going to fund our road maintenance fees now that national forest receipts are not enough to fund them. So that's a whole different discussion you don't have to get into right now, but I expect we haven't heard our number yet for this fiscal year. It's generally announced in the spring, although it can be announced as late as July after the fiscal year has closed. I'm anticipating it would be similar to the last year's, but I don't really know. But either way, we don't put it into the budget. Payment in lieu of taxes. You can see it's been pretty steady along the way. We just budgeted at what it came in at last year at $113,000. So that's our federal revenue section here. Fundraising, this is also from the library, just adjusted to match current activities there. Ambulance, this GCN income, this is from the old Gustavus Community Network. This is just a relic from FY17, so there's nothing there currently since that enterprise fund is closed. Then we're into the Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department income. With ambulance billing, the ambulance subscription program, and training. And we just budgeted those about the same as we did this year. They don't move around a whole lot. excuse me. Interest income is about the same. We bumped up gravel pit sales a little bit, reflecting what we've taken in so far this year at $26,000. So it's our budgeted for next fiscal year is budgeted conservatively at $25,000. This lease income is a pretty static number. This is for our ACS, GCI, and AT&T leases near the school gym where the towers are located. Library income is pretty static. That's for meeting room rentals, copies, faxes, things like that. Now we're into marine facilities income, facilities usage fees. This is for transient moorage and single use launching of boats, things like that. Commercial vessel registration, we bumped that back up from what we had anticipated or budgeted last year with the expectation that most of the charter fleet will be active again this year, the charter fishing fleet. The private vessel registration, we left the same. And the storage area fee, we left the same. This is for long-term storage in the parking lot, kind of near the disposal and recycling center on the way to the boat harbor. Next, we have state revenue. First is the Community Assistance Program. This used to be called the Community Revenue Sharing Program. This is based on a formula that takes into account population size and other factors. We've received our estimate for next fiscal year is at 77,598. So I've entered that number there. And no indication on the liquor share tax. We've received that once. So that's left blank here. And then the shared fisheries business tax, I put in a conservative 500 because it's with the commercial fishing returns, it sounded like that number was going to be going down. Okay, any questions before we get into the tax income? Okay, so last fiscal year, we had a very conservative budget of basically kind of a winter income all year round. And to date, we've definitely exceeded that with one quarter to still to come in. I think we're gonna end up around $238,000 for retail tax income this fiscal year. Given the information we're hearing about lodges opening and other activities, other commercial activities taking place this coming summer, we've estimated a retail tax income at $325,000. You can see back in our peak year in FY19, before any pandemic activity had started, which started at the tail end of FY20, we received 392. So this is still quite a bit, a projection of quite a bit lower than that. Trying to kind of walk the line between what we took in, what we're going to take in this year, and what a normal year might look like. The remote sellers tax, retail tax, this is a program that Alaska Municipal League has spearheaded that we've joined in on. And this is collecting tax for internet sales for items that are shipped to Gustavus. Many communities are doing that around Alaska, so that's what this line item is representing. Room tax income, again, we put in a very conservative number. This is a number we might consider putting higher, but we can discuss that. We projected it at $40,000. I think we should end up receiving $20,000 by the time yeah, we're already at 19. So we'll hit 20 grand for this fiscal year. We were at 78 grand in FY20. And so 40 is just over half of that. So that's somewhere where, from what we're hearing about bookings, that's a number we might consider increasing, but I feel like $40,000 is safe at this point. And then the fish box tax, we budgeted at zero, not knowing if the charter fleet would be able to operate last year, and they were able to, so we did take in some funds. We kind of split the difference between what we took in last year and what a larger year, more normal year looks like. And so that's at 7,500. So with that, with all of those projections and then that unknown, that $99,000 estimated for the COVID-19 relief, we're looking at $839,000. So still under what we would be receiving back in these more healthy years, healthy economy years. Are there any questions on this side of the, or discussion about the tax income or anything like that before we move on? Go ahead, Joe. Clark?
Thank you, Phoebe. I have a question about the room tax. We have the airport workers that are coming into town and will be here probably for an extended period of time. Do they have to, after 30 days, do they have to continue paying room tax? Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Good question. The room tax does not apply for rentals that are longer than 30 days. So we wouldn't be receiving any room tax for any long-term rentals for any of the construction projects this summer.
Thank you.
Any other questions, or else I'll just keep plugging along and we can discuss as we go later? Okay. Now we're coming down to the expense side of things. The first category here is administrative costs. We had a big year back in FY19 when we did review services to have the accountant go through our books. So that's why that number is big. Otherwise, it's just steady right here, $1,000 or $2,000. I've got a note over here that we should discuss tonight at some point about whether we want to budget an audit in here. We, if we expend more than $750,000 of federal tax funds in a fiscal year, we are required to complete an audit. We can use CARES Act funds for that if we have any remaining. That was an eligible expense for CARES Act funds. And now that the CARES Act funds have been extended through the end of this calendar year, that is an option. I'm not sure yet if we're going to hit that threshold, as we're still waiting to see what we're going to get for National Forest receipts and what funds we might get from FEMA for either the COVID-19 response or the flood response. So it's still kind of up in the air. I think that we'll probably get some funds from FEMA for our COVID response, which would free up some of our CARES Act dollars to help pay for an audit. And this all circle all back around, but you may recall last year we had talked about budgeting for an audit before the pandemic really trimmed our budget, just because we're kind of due for one. We haven't had one, I think, since FY17. But we were waiting to see if we were going to ever actually have a big project that would trigger and force us to do it in the near term. So that being said, if we want to get on the calendar for an audit, we kind of need to sign up sooner than later, because there are a lot of communities that need to get audited this year and a lot of organizations because of all the CARES Act funds that went out. And so we might consider putting funds in here, even if it's $30,000 is the estimate for an audit. Even if we wanted to put in half of that, hoping that FEMA was going to free up 15 grand of our CARES Act funds by covering some of those expenses or something like that. But we can come back to that, but that's what that note is there to consider for the administrative costs. We can also just do a wait and see approach and see if we hit the threshold or not. Once National Forest receipts come in, the FEMA money settles out, and we have a clearer picture. We just might be late getting on the calendar for the accountants. Advertising, this is just kind of a placeholder for occasion we've done job advertisements or things like that. Our bank service charges are going up because they're calculating our fees or our waiver from fees in a different manner now because of some change at the Department of Treasury. And so now we're no longer getting things for free that we once had. I'm still researching that more. But this is like our check deposit freeze, our check the checks that we're writing, those getting cash fees for that, our wire transfer fees, and then just a monthly annual maintenance fee, things like that. So that's why that's bumped up right now. Our insurance quote, we won't have that probably until early May. So that would be something that we, if it's drastically different than what we budgeted, that we would add in at the May general meeting to adjust the budget. Joe Clark, did you have a question?
Thank you, Phoebe. I have a question about the audit. Are there advantages to having an audit, and how long does an audit last? Is it something yearly if we go over a certain amount, or what's the cutoff on that? Thank you.
Sure, there's a threshold that triggers a mandatory audit if you receive over $750,000, if you expend more than $750,000 of state or federal funds in a fiscal year, you're required to get an audit. And so at this point, we're right on the cusp of that, depending on how National Forest receipts funds come in and how any FEMA dollars come in, because we had that big chunk of CARES Act funds. So between that and PILT, the payment in lieu of taxes, and National Forest receipts and FEMA, we're really close to that threshold, depending on what those dollars ended up being. The advantages to it are that it's just good practice to do, and we haven't had one for several years. I am interested in having one just because there were a few accounts that I had to clean up when I started, and I would I'd love to have an accountant really get into our QuickBooks accounting file and just go through it really thoroughly to make sure everything's cleaned up properly, which we did partially with our review services that we did a couple years ago. They did a first sweep of that and everything looked great. So it's just good practice to have somebody else besides me really get into the books really in depth. And we haven't had any big projects that have triggered it. When we did all the, when the city did the bridges along Mountain View Road a few years ago, we had 2 years in a row that we went over the threshold of expended federal funds and triggered an audit for 2 years in a row. And we just haven't had since then they've upped the threshold amount, and we just have not come close to meeting it to force an audit. And it's such a big ticket item, it's hard to want to spend $30,000 if you don't have to have an audit. So we've just kind of been stuck in kind of a waffling spot with that. And we were kind of ready to pull the trigger last year, but then with the pandemic, it was not a good year to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have back to the insurance numbers. We won't have final numbers for building insurance, workers' comp, general liability, vehicle insurance, things like that until May. So I've just put in our either our budgeted or actual numbers from last spring. So that's what's in there now. So these numbers might change. I'm sure they'll change. I just don't know how much. They went up quite a bit last year for several different reasons in the insurance market environment. So I'm hoping we don't have another year of that. And building maintenance and repair, we kind of left where we normally budget it. We've spent less than that this year because we were able to do some improvements tied with the pandemic. So that's where that is. Contractual services, we have ambulance billing expense. That's the billing service provider that we contract with to bill out all the insurance companies for any ambulance calls. So that's a pretty steady number. Our managed IT services, this is just what we've been budgeting under our current contract. This could change in the coming year. We will be advertising this, putting on an RFP, RFP or request for proposals for the managed IT services starting in FY22. So that number could change, but that's the best number we have right now. And then this contractual services other is kind of always a big catch-all, and it's a big number. So I can just give you some examples here of what is included in there. And we can look at it also by department. If you have this file, council members, along the bottom here, there are three tabs in this work, in this Excel spreadsheet file. And there's one by department, and then it splits it out by each department, what they bring in and expend. But I'll just stay on this one for simplification. So the contractual services includes our Muni Code, which is our website for the city. It's the website hosting and the meeting software that we're now using, and the codification for any ordinance change that occurs each year. It also includes our archive social fee for archiving our social media accounts now that we're expanded and up and running there. For the DRC, it includes recycling electronic waste, the e-waste, and then any wood chips for the compost program or overburden for the landfill. For the library, it includes full funding for custodial services at 6 hours per week. And for the marine facilities, it includes transferring the wooden float and the steel floats in the spring and fall. So that was that's one of the big increases from FY20 over here, because we didn't have to move the steel mooring float until starting this current year. So those are the items that are the big ticket items that are in the contractual services. It also includes small building projects. If a department is installing lights or something like that, that would also go under contractual services. Dues fees is another big ticket that's kind of nebulous, so I'm going to go through those really quick too. For the admin department, it's a lot of memberships in Alaska Municipal League, Southeast Conference, Alaska Conference of Mayors, two clerks organizations, things like that. For the DRC, it's annual fees to the getting the scale certified and keeping the landfill certified. And then also includes now a fee for the trash flow software that we now have up and running at the point of sale computer and remote access software to be able to access that. So I can start doing billing through City Hall. And for the library, it includes their online book materials catalog, their book subscriptions and magazines, and they're hoping to add the Juno Empire weekend subscription also. So that's in dues fees. Under economic development services, currently it has the full request from the Gustavus Visitors Association in here at $40,580. So that, I don't know if that's something the council wants to discuss tonight or not either, but that is, right now we've got the full number plugged in. Election expenses just stays pretty steady. Equipment fuel, this is for the equipment at the DRC. An equipment purchase, this is just includes We've been kind of slowly refreshing our computers, and then there's other small equipment all the departments have, and that just adds up to that. Equipment insurance is, again, it's for the DRC, and then maintenance and repair, which the bulk of this is for the DRC. Moving on, we have our events and celebrations. This is for the holiday gift for the employees and for an open house when we've had one in the past that goes under this category. Freight shipping is a big one that's largely the DRC shipping out recyclables or other bulky waste or things like that. It also includes an increase for the library shipping out returning interlibrary loan books. It's seen a big surge of increase this year. And then just regular freight costs for everybody, for all the departments. Fundraising expenses is pretty small. General liability, again, we'll get a more accurate number in May for that. Gravel pit fund, I left out another $6,000 contribution to the AMLET fund that the council just opened. This was budgeted initially last year after the council passed an increase in the cubic yard price for pit run gravel to be able to set some of those funds aside that we're earning for gravel pit related expenses, as we are seeing things change there over time as our current methods are reaching near the end of their life. So that's, I just left that at six again. Library materials is up compared to past years. We've been trying to refresh different sections of the library each year, and the funds that have been allocated aren't quite cutting it. It's not buying enough books to really be able to refresh some of the nonfiction sections, which are quite dated. And then this also includes funds to help offset the Battle of the Books program that the school has been doing, and the library and libraries around the state purchased the books for. So that's why that's higher. Marine facilities insurance is insurance on the big float. And maybe the beach bath, maybe the waterless bathrooms. Sorry, I'm not remembering offhand. I have to look back here. No, just for the float. It's just for the steel float. And then maintenance repairs, that's just as the marine facilities coordinator needs things to maintain. Payroll. I might come back to payroll because I think that's going to be a larger discussion. So let's leave that one for now. Professional services. This is fees for the attorney. And we actually have two attorneys. We have our city attorney right now, and then we have another attorney we're working with for the on the electric rate issues. So that's what that is. Public relations is just small expenses for sponsorship or things like that. The repair and replacement fund, this is a calculated based on different formulas for replacing our fixed assets in all of our different departments. I need to run through the numbers to make sure that, to see what this number actually is for next fiscal year based on the aging of our assets. So I'll double check that number, but it should be right around there. I just haven't run the numbers yet. Road maintenance is bumped up to $150,000 from $100,000. And this again is coming straight out of savings. This is not funded through any of the other income sources that we went through at the top of the page. Nothing for the rookeries, they're not operating right now. The no requests received from them. We added a stipend last year to for the EMS and fire volunteers to help offset the use of their personal vehicles and their time and their supplies and things like that. So that's in there still at $3,000. Supplies is another big item. It's kind of just what you think it would be with general office supplies and things like that for City Hall, for the DRC. It's their supplies, their baling wire and trash can liners and things like that. For the fire hall, it's EMS supplies or the ambulance. For the library, there's a slight increase here to continue the grab and go kits that the library have been doing. There's also a one-time purchase of some book stickers for recataloging a portion of the library. And then there's also a slight bump up this year for marine facilities because we need to buy vessel stickers every 3 years and they're expensive. And otherwise it's just basic supplies for the departments. Telecom is internet, phone, and Microsoft licenses. Training, we bumped up just a little bit to include training costs for the librarians, which we had zeroed out last year. They're required because a lot of training wasn't occurring or it was free, but they're required training for their grants they receive. We left so there's a little bit of increase there for training and travel. We left the rest of training and travel pretty low for all of the departments. There's funds in there to cover if a couple of new council members wanted to go to the Alaska Municipal League meeting, if they hold it in person up in Anchorage in the fall. There's funds then for the DRC positions for training and for the fire hall too. And then the rest of these are pretty straightforward. I'll tighten up these numbers as we get closer to the end. I'll go through them one more time before we introduce in April to make sure we're still running, these numbers still are looking good. But electricity, fuel, oil, and then the vehicle fuel, this is for the ambulance and fire truck. And then mileage reimbursements for employees using their vehicles for city business. I know that's really fast. Are there any? Before we go through that. So then on the bottom here, we have other income. This is the transfer. So there, here's, you can see over the years, pulling funds out of those old National Forest Receipts funds that we had saved, pulling them out. And now that those are done. And now we're just pulling out of our regular savings, an account we have set up for road maintenance. And so you can see that there. Last year, we budgeted bringing in $217,000 of our surplus funds that we had saved in previous years to balance the budget to get through the pandemic. As of right now, we haven't had to pull any of those funds out of savings yet, and it certainly won't be that high if we do have to. I would say at the most it's going to be 100, and I actually think it's going to be quite a bit less than that, if anything, but I need to run those numbers also. But we do have surplus funds from prior years that we have saved, that councils in the past have saved in our Alaska Municipal League investment pool accounts. And so that is another option to pull in funds to help balance the budget if we need to get through this pandemic year. Any questions on all of that before we go back to the payroll section? Go ahead, Mike.
Phoebe, this is...
Oh, go ahead, Joe Vanderzin.
That AMLIP fund for the gravel pit, is this, did we just finish our first year in that, so there's just 6,000?
Yes, exactly. We have other funds in the capital project funds, and so there's other funds available, but the gravel pit fund only has $6,000 in it.
Okay, and I wondered if you happen to know off the top of your head how much the steel float is insured for 20.
I want to say, I mean, it's like millions. Or here, we can look. I can look. Hold on. It's in the, yes, I can find that number while someone else is talking. Mike, do you want to go ahead? Is that all? Joe, and I'll go look that number up real quick.
I did have one other question, but Mike can.
Go ahead, Joe. I can wait.
I thought I saw an email recently that the GVA had reduced their request to 20,000, which would have been 50% of what's projected here for income. And I wondered if that was.
I did not see that. So I can't answer that question. I don't know if Tom or Brittany are have any information on that.
I can tell you what I know on that, Joe. The original request that GVA submitted, I provided a little feedback on it and asked a couple of questions. And then Leah looked at it and made some adjustments, and it reduced the request by, I want to say it was $10,000. In addition, as a nonprofit, I think they're only able to receive funds up to $45,000. So that probably also was considered in reducing the funding. One of the primary reasons the request is higher than it has been in the past is because of the staffing that they implemented to execute their new approach or their improved approach to marketing Gustavus. Some of that likely comes from the CARES Act grants that businesses received and the GVA received to help bolster our presence on the web. So the so as far as I know, the only reduction was about $10,000 down to 40.
And I've got the number here. The float is valued at $1.5 million, still float. And the insurance company was hoping to send somebody out to assess it last year, but it was not yet off the mooring or something. The timing didn't work out, so there could be somebody come to look at it this year.
Okay, well, thank you.
This is Taylor. I also had a question about that GVA line. My question is, do we have a problem or a conflict with our ordinance if we fund them more than half of what we are receiving for the room tax? And I can't remember whether that is what we received in the previous year for room tax or what we're expecting to receive this year. And so if we're, it looks like we're proposing here to fund them over 100% of the room tax receipts. Would we need to perhaps make some ordinance change, even a non-code ordinance adjustment that allows us to fund them more than 50% of the room tax receipts if we want to do that? Thanks.
The way the policy and procedure reads for the GVA, I'm supposed to report the room tax receipts for the prior year in October to kind of kick off the whole process of the GVA. And so the funds that are under consideration would be the previous completed fiscal year, which is 78,574. So half of that would be 39 and a quarter. So it is just over half. And I'll pull up the language. I think that it's, I think there are a lot, the council can allocate up to half the room tax and anything beyond that. It just had to be done in a meeting or something. I'll pull up the language. It didn't seem like a large procedural hurdle, but I'll pull up the language and the code while other people are asking questions.
Yeah, I think that'll be helpful. If we're pretty close to the 50%, we're probably okay, but otherwise we're gonna have to take some special action.
Go ahead, Tanya.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, I was trying to find that letter from Leah. I thought the request went from 40,000 to just over 20,000. So we should track that down and update the number. I just had a question. I just want to make sure I understood the big picture here. We basically, our expenses are about 200,000 more than our income. But there already is a proposal to take 150,000 from savings for the roads. Is that, or that's already been decided, or can you explain that a little bit more to me?
Sure, our current income structure is not capable of funding the roads. It has solely been funded through National Forest receipts, either prior year's saved receipts or current year funds from National Forest receipts until this year. This is the first year that it is now all run out. We will expect to be getting some National Forest receipts. So this number, down here at the bottom for what we've taken out of savings might change. Sorry about that. We took $62,000 out of our not former National Forest receipts funds here. So these are funds that could be spent on anything that we have in an AMLIP savings account for roads right now. So if we get our normal like 45 grand or something, then this number would decrease by 45 grand because the National Forest receipts for the current year would cover some of the roads. But in all of these fiscal years, nothing is coming out of the income side to cover the roads except for National Forest receipts. And so until we adjust our income to be able to pay for roads, it's still coming out of savings unless some other drastic change is occurring with the spending.
Okay, so I mean, we basically are $200,000 shy in the budget. Or short, I should say.
Yes, you can think of it that way, but I'd caution thinking about that way because that is not a new predicament. So our current predicament is 50 grand shy. The roads issue is an issue that needs to be dealt with and was before the pandemic hit, we had one option that was before the council for consideration in the community was a seasonal fuel tax that was up for public hearing last spring and removed because of the pandemic occurring and it was not a good time to be increasing fees. But roads are on an unsustainable trajectory. Mm-hmm. And definitely need to be dealt with, but I would think of our budget right now as being 50 grand in the hole because we have not done anything to address how we're going to pay for roads. So there's two issues going on. And we have the council a few years ago set aside an AMLIP account that had up to 3 years saved to give future councils some time to adjust to this new reality of not having National Forest receipts, and we have now entered that new reality and have yet to adjust our revenue stream to accommodate it.
Okay, thank you.
Brittany, did you want to go ahead and speak?
Yeah, thank you. I just forwarded along an email from Leah with the GVA that was sent February 19th. And I think this is the email that Vice Mayor Van der Zanden and Councilmember Lewis was talking about. If I am reading it right, so for the GVA budget adjustment for fiscal year 22, I think it was reassessed at 20,400. But I forwarded you that email as well, Phoebe.
Okay, I'll look at that. I don't know if that's their total ask or not. So I need to, or if they're just, if that was just part of it. So I will have to look at that. On another GVA topic, I pulled up the code here. So I'll just show that really quick so we are on the same page with that one. You can see here under financial support, I'm not seeing the wording I was thinking I've seen. Maybe it's some policy and procedure. Okay, I can't read that email and facilitate the meeting. It looks like Leah is online. I don't know if we want to take public comment or not. I'll leave that up to you, Mayor.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what Leah has to say. Thanks.
Hi, thank you, Madam Mayor. Just wanted to clarify. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So the 20,400, that was just for the salary position. So that's three salary positions, and that's the same amount as it has been in the past. We reduced that amount from the 30,000. We reduced it 10,000 to the 20,400 to the salary position. So that was that adjustment. It was 10,000 less. The full amount that's being asked is 40,580. And what that that amount is that's higher than previous amounts, and it's pretty comparable. It's just a little bit higher than previous years. And that money is all marketing. It goes into marketing. So that 20,400 is the salaries, which is comparable to previous years. And the total amount is 40,580. I'm happy to answer any quick questions, but I hope that clarifies.
Thanks, Leah. That does help.
Tani, did you have another question?
Nope, sorry. I forgot to take my hand down.
That's okay. I forgot to do it too. Okay. Then I think if we don't have any other questions, we can move over to the payroll section then. So payroll has several different things going on here. We have proposals from the departments for three new positions. The first position we discussed last year also was for an operator position at the DRC to take over kind of day-to-day operations and start receiving the knowledge of that operation and the institutional knowledge that Paul Berry has from being there so that Paul can retire someday and we won't, we'll be ready to keep things running as smoothly as they are now. This operator position was in the budget last year and then was cut once the pandemic started occurring, because it wasn't a great time for that. So the operator position is added in here with a 0.92 full-time equivalent. The manager hours are down from last year and the assistants are also down with the operator position coming online. For all these new positions, if they're regular permanent positions, I plug them in at the highest benefits possible so that we're covered. And then if they do anything less or different, then it's we're not going over budget. And so I put them in at the full matching 7% retirement contribution and taking the maximum group health plan costs that would occur. So that's that position. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to note that I appreciate Paul's attempt to get somebody trained up to be to carry on with the DRC going forward. But if Paul retires and we have that position open, it would be posted and open to others to apply. And there's no actual assurance that the person who was hired by as operator is going to move into that position. So we should be thinking about that. However, we would also have the option at that time of perhaps eliminating the manager position and just stick with the operator and boost the responsibilities, pay time and so forth for the operator. So we'd have some options around then, but there's no assurance that the operator would move directly into the manager position. That'd be up to the hiring by the mayor and the council. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. That's a good point. Currently, Paul is a manager slash operator. And so, like you said, that position could merge back into one position once all his knowledge has been passed along, or be retained as two separate positions, like you're saying. Those are our options there. So that's that. Paul Berry is online if people want to hear more of a knowledgeable explanation of that position. We could go have Paul speak to that also. There's also on here included an EMS coordinator position. I definitely would recommend having Travis speak to that if you can explain it more thoroughly. But I'm just going to cover these really quick before we get in depth. And then there's also a library assistant position. And with our library services director sadly departing us, there's also been some discussion of revamping the library structure. And so I have this new little section down here at the bottom called the library alternate scenario. And again, I'll let Michelle speak to that more in depth. But again, I plugged these all in at maximum benefits, and it's a big increase over last year, but I think the council should really think thoroughly about it. We've got several departments asking for help. So it's a something that should be at least be considered. So maybe each of the departments could just speak to the new position being proposed for a couple minutes, starting with Paul.
Phoebe, this is Michelle, and I'm wondering if maybe I could go first to avoid a bit of a toddler meltdown.
Sure, go for it.
Okay, thank you. So the library assistant position, Jen and I have discussed quite a bit the need for another position within the library, and the library for a long time has relied on volunteers, and even if we do have this position, we would still be reliant on volunteers. Volunteers are pretty integral to our operation, and in the past volunteers have done everything at the library, and now lots of things have come back to the director positions, and we lack the time within our job description, within our payroll budget, to complete a lot of things. And we discussed whether it would be more appropriate to have an assistant or to ask to have our hours upped. And we decided that an assistant would be what the library needs more. And so the position would largely do circulation desk duties. And this would be assisting patrons, checking out books, checking in books, helping with questions. And then as well as a really big project would be to get our circulation data correct and up to date. So we have this program that we keep all of our books cataloged in, our cataloging program, all of our books, all our DVDs, everything that is in the library is in the system. And it's very inaccurate. And it's inaccurate, not to anybody's fault, but just because there have been years of different people putting in different information in different ways. And that is a task that is crucial to knowing what is inside our library and keeping track of our collection. And that is something that we just quite frankly don't have time to do. And so this position would have that as a duty as well. So that's the assistant position. And I'm happy to take questions about that before I maybe speak about the director and program coordinator position.
I just want to add a quick clarification too, that the library would like to see this as a permanent position. What we've done in here for the budgeting purposes is a starting point, is put it in at half time for the first half of the fiscal year, and then reevaluate the need after that, depending on the workload and whether the volunteer base has increased and things like that. So that's why it's in there that way right now.
Yeah, thank you, Phoebe. And I guess I'd also like to add on that we are at a point where we feel like relying on volunteers is no longer realistic, that the needs of the community for the library have outgrown two part-time paid staff. And again, we're really thankful for our volunteers, and we will love to keep them and have them volunteer still. But I'm gonna speak for we, but recognize a lot of this information also comes before I was hired. There were a number of times, I would say, from my speaking with Jen and Bree, on a regular basis, staff was called in to cover a shift at the library where a volunteer last minute wasn't available. Whether their car broke down, or they decided to go fishing, or it was sunny outside, or it was too snowy for them to get to the library, or just lots of different ones. And so we are a regularly scheduled service. And if we want to keep open the amount of hours that we were pre-pandemic, which is about 20 hours, we are at a point where we need to have a paid staff there working with volunteer. And that's the last of that that I have for this position. Thanks. Hearing no questions, Phoebe, do you think I should move on to the director position, or should I wait for another time for that?
No, I think if we've got you, let's get you while we can.
Okay. So aside from hiring a library assistant, as we all know, Jen is leaving, and talking with Tom, this is a time that we've decided might be a good opportunity to readjust the positions as they are. So currently we have two directors. We have a shared director position split between two people. One does the administrative tasks and the other does the services or programming tasks. And then we both share quite a bit of duties. So the proposed change is to have one library director and to have a program coordinator. So there would be one director who oversees the operations of the library, and then a program coordinator who would spend their time, bulk of their time, creating, coordinating, planning, completing programs for the public. So this would do a few things. Having one director would standardize us with the industry. It's common to have one person overseeing an operation, and then underneath that, other positions fulfilling their duties for that job. So this could also streamline decision-making and implementing plans. Right now, the way that Jen and I work to keep the library open, we work mostly separate hours. We overlap about an hour a day, sometimes a little more and sometimes a little less, how we can adjust our hours for the day. But it can take quite a bit of time to come to a consensus about operational decisions for the library. And this is just because we consult with each other about most library decisions that are made. And this would also prevent the potential for having two directors operating the library in two different ways who might have two different visions. And one director could really hone in on our current operational plan and our strategic plan for the library. And it could get rid of some confusion, potential confusion between staff, future staff, and volunteers on their point of contact. So also something that maybe is newer information to lots of people, I didn't quite realize the bigness of the output that Jen's job has with programs, but programming is a integral to our library, to all libraries, and libraries are more than books on the shelves and DVDs and books that people check out, but it's also programming. And programming really brings together a lot of our mission statement, and having a position that they focus on this program specifically has a potential to provide more outreach for the people of Gustavus through these programs. And I guess at this point, I think I would just like to take any questions about this. I'm happy to answer any of them. Yes, thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, I think there's a lot to be said about this proposed alternate model for operation for the reasons that Michelle has stated. I would just note that historically, I think the main reason we had a split position there was that the people who were available and interested in serving in these positions did not want to work full time. And so we years ago split the position for that reason. I think going to a single director makes a lot of sense with the support that she's outlined here. So I have no questions, just wanted to indicate.
Thanks, Mike. Anybody else? All right. Thanks so much, Michelle. It's very helpful.
Yes, thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me go first.
Thanks. Paul Berry, do you want to speak about the operator position?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, you can? Oh, good. As you, we've been working on this for over a year, and it's more than just replacing me, although that's, really a good way to look at it. It's also making another regular position at the DRC, the labor pool, which has been successful. These are temporary positions. Everybody has to be rehired. and there are no benefits, and it's been difficult to implement training in a professional training, kind of like SWANA training and stuff like that, to a pool of volunteers. So to kind of pull together the secessional plan and to formalize training, the operator position kind of, you know, I've created a little chart for like 3 years worth of training and hopefully, you know, small pay step increases with that, because it's kind of a demonstration that the person is sticking with the program. I mean, I'm really hoping, you know, we get someone who's interested in improving our system as a career, as opposed to just a job, so that, you know, there's incentive to kind of to stick with it. And as Mike mentioned earlier, it's, you know, when I retire, of course, the whole thing is going to be rearranged. I mean, that's what you do. And I mean, the library is an example of that. When people change, it's the time you kind of shuffle things. But we're not at that time yet. This is more kind of approaching that and kind of looking at a way to bring someone else on. So there's more, I mean, it's very useful for me, because I'll be honest with you, you know, the DRC has been my baby for 27 years, and letting go of it, letting it, you know, have its own has been very important, but it's, you know, it's been an effort for me, and this is kind of formalizing that effort. And I want to do it in such a way that, you know, okay, let's say the operator who the city hires, well, that only lasts for a year, but at least there would be more of a mechanism in place for going forward. Because I don't want to get too off on my little tangents, but the plan with this is, you know, is for myself, I would just be covering for the operator or the assistants, and the operator would be the primary person working there, much like I did in the past, 3 days a week with an additional 2 days in the summer doing catch-up work, an additional 1 day in the winter doing catch-up work. So that's a 40-hour week in the summer, and transitioning to a 32-hour week in somewhere in October, and then picking up it again in April, which is kind of a schedule I did at one point in this. And then the assistant operator is for that second person. All Saturdays have two operators, and then starting in either, well, it's kind of, it really depends on the season. Sometimes it seems bringing in the second operator on, so you have two people every day of operation, every day that you're open to the public of operation, starting that in May is a little too late. So it's usually some point in April. I mean, I think with this year, I'm scheduling it for May, but that second, that only pool is for being the second operator from some point, well, year round for Saturdays, and then for some point in early May or late April, and then that would go back to just one operator except Saturdays in the beginning of October. So that's why those numbers for full-time equivalent are what they are, because it really depends on the season. But again, the importance of the operator is formalizing training, because what I found was useful, and I owe some credit to this to Mike Taylor and his, you know, wanting to get professional training way back before the city incorporated, you know, back in 2004, 2005, is, you know, what I have gained from SWANA trainings, especially when you're going somewhere and seeing sites and meeting with your peer or your peer group, that whole thing is what I have found to be very useful. And that's kind of what engages a person and can kind of make it more career possibility, as opposed to, you know, just being an operator who's kind of picking up stuff for me and whatnot. It's real important, I believe, to get someone, you know, get them professional training, so they're taking on the field for themselves. They're learning for themselves, you know, what's, how other people are doing it. And it kind of, you know, it's much easier to keep our operation in comparison and kind of go forward that way. And kind of finally with the operator position is that this would be the same person year round. This is seeking someone that is making this their, you know, it's full-time in the summer and not quite full-time in the winter. And, you know, when I move on, they may very well become manager operator. I think that's actually a realistic model. I don't think the community would ever be hiring a purely landfill manager at some point, because small facilities are just such a different animal than the large facilities, where the manager really can't operate or can't act as operator just because of the demands that are placed on that department. You know, it's very interesting. We have a lot of those same components as far as our structure, but just because we're small, things are different. But again, you know, when I step away, I really do see whoever is in the operator position kind of would become manager operator, and it would be kind of the same thing, because I think it's much easier to gain the experience from the ground up, as opposed to, you know, when the manager steps out, you know, actually looking outside the city for a manager for a landfill. I just think the odds of that are pretty nil. So that's, you know, it's kind of the successional plan, and it's to create a position that is more career. So someone who is taking it is kind of like, okay, this is what I've committed my work to be for however long they're doing it. If it's 1 year, if it's 10 years, or if it's 20 years. So yeah, I'll take any questions if anybody has any questions.
Yeah, Paul, this is Joe van der Zanden. I just wondered if you had picked out a date when you would actually retire, even though you might be phasing out after that date. But just that.
I turn 62 in 2024, and that's when I can start picking up Social Security. You know, whether or not I'll have, you know, there's a part of me that'd like to retire now, and there's a part of me that's like, oh my God, I can't retire. But that's kind of my target date, honestly, is when I turn 62, which would be in 2024. Don't hold me to it, but it's just, don't chase me away then. But you know, yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have questions for Paul? All right, thank you, Paul. Thank you very much. It's very helpful. Travis, are you available to describe the EMS coordinator position for the council?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Just need to make sure that's muted. Yep. All right. So thanks for the moment to propose this position of the EMS coordinator. It's actually a job description that I have been working on for the last few years. It's something that I thought Paul's position was going to make it into the a normal position earlier in my career here. So I've been just kind of holding off, but I've been finding the need of this position more and more as years go on. So it's something I've noticed a few years back. Quick overview, just in general, you know, my job is the fire chief. As you look at this little graph, I'm the only person in my whole department that works there. I do have those wonderful 20 to 25 to 30 volunteers that are available when they're not at work and or not spending time with their family and have that moment to run off. In a normal fire department, in any fire department, doesn't matter, Juneau, Anchorage, Gustavus, Sitka, Ketchikan, New York, California, anywhere, it doesn't matter. We all have the same jobs inside of that department, and we all do search and rescue, fire, EMS, lots of admin, and all other types of stuff. And I do all of those same jobs and all of the same paperwork and all of the same stuff, maybe on a smaller scale as all of those other fire chiefs and fire departments have to do. I just don't have people underneath me like most of those other fire departments do to help me with those tasks. There's a lot that goes on inside the fire department that we should all be experts, or at least close, or at least achieving to be an expert in that job title or description. And there's no way that one person can be an expert in all of those job descriptions and titles. There's lots of things that we miss on a day-to-day basis as far as like maintenance to vehicles and other things, just because it takes more than one person at times just to, you know, do some of these jobs and go that route. So that, you know, the EMS coordinator is probably the position that I can use the most as far as it's our busiest division. It's I'm a great EMT, but I'm not the best EMS instructor out there. I'm a way better fire instructor. That's what I've been doing most of my career. And so having help with the EMS and making those people better EMTs would be a huge add-on to that. Also, the EMS world in the state of Alaska has started to go online with their classes. I currently have 3 people. I'm taking this online class. And if you were to talk to any of them, you can ask them how much time I have to actually help them with that class right now. So part of this would be maintaining, putting people through these online programs, online EMT programs, and assisting them all the way through the process on skills checks and following them through as their mentor. We're working on getting all of our volunteers to help with that, but it's not an easy task for me to do. So they would also assist on or do all of the teaching, work with the EMS medical director, who's Dr. Bott, in implementing his vision of medicine. We work under his medical license, so we can only do what he allows us to do and also what the state allows us to do. So we'd be working on doing our yearly update of our plan, our protocols, to make sure that those are in line, and ordering supplies, inventorying supplies. It's a laundry list of things. It's a department where we also, like I said, we're the busiest, and it'd be nice to be able to actually take a night off in some sense. Also, since I got here in July of 2016, I've basically, except a couple small vacations that I've been able to take or trainings, I guess that's still working. I work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I go to on calls at 2 in the morning, and I'm at work at 7-8 o'clock in the morning. The next morning, I don't get the time to take off, because that's just how my job operates. So I don't get the luxury of flexing hours or having those moments. So it'd be nice to be able to share some of those moments with somebody, of being able to turn my radio down and actually be able to sleep. I also deal with, there's a lot that I have to go through on a daily basis or a yearly basis. It's not every day, I guess, but I've dealt with a lot since I've moved here also. And a lot of those things start to build. And everybody has a breaking point at some point. So at some point, that's going to break. I'm not saying it's coming yet, but sharing this load that I have to deal with would be super beneficial for my mental health, for all of our volunteers' mental health, and just making sure that the community has another paid professional assisting in the medical world, where I think our community would really like to have the best care that we possibly can give. So I could go on and on about why this position's needed and useful, but there's a lot of reasons why the fire department needs to add another position. And I think the future is having an EMS coordinator to oversee most of the heavy part of the division work, while the fire chief can do a lot more of the admin and get a lot of that done. It also allows me to expand a lot more into emergency management and taking on some more of those duties, getting a community emergency response team, which is the next training you guys will all see me trying to get you guys suckered into. So when we do have disasters, we are even more planned and better planned, which just involves more time and that I have to try to work in and push something else off. So that's my position in a nutshell. I'm more than happy to take questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Travis. Mike, before I get to you, Travis, could you also, I know when I first saw this position, my first reaction was why full time? Could you talk a little bit about that and about recruitment, please?
Yeah, so the reason that this is a full time position is that I want to recruit somebody to the city, I guess. There's not very many people in our community that have the experience that would also be relevant to bring on to this position. I don't like to talk about myself, but you brought somebody into the community that had some outside experience, that had some extra training, that was going on call, 100 plus EMS calls and 40 fire calls a year. So bringing somebody in that has that experience, that can bring that knowledge and training and insight from seeing something else also is huge. We only have a couple people that are qualified to the level that I would like to bring on, which is an EMT 2 level. That's our it's the mid-level EMT, and it's actually gained a lot of protocols over the last year. We just haven't been able to train anybody those new protocols onto our only, we have two EMT2s in our department. That's Cassie and Kelly Graham. And I don't, Kelly Graham was a past chief here. I don't think he would be interested in taking this position. And honestly, I don't think Cassie is gonna give up her gig over at her family business to move over to take this on also. So I guess I have it listed at $23 an hour there. I have listed on my job description some other stipulations to add some increases over time, like if they become an EMT3 to have a raise in there, and also if you become a firefighter slash learn how to operate all of our vehicles or something, to add some more money in there as incentives to get some further training to better protect the community. So the main reason for a full-time person is I don't think we could recruit somebody from outside that would want to kind of move all the way out here to do this position. So that's one reason of that. And this position itself is a full-time position inside of this fire department in its own right. So that's the other side of that. Thanks.
Thanks, Travis. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just wanted to support this idea as a member of the fire department and who's been involved in some of this stuff over the years. And I was particularly glad that Travis mentioned the duties of emergency manager. And, you know, this fall and early winter, we had two emergencies going at the same time here, the COVID stuff and the flood. And we got a real trial by fire with both of those on how we address them in the ICS system and how we work with agencies, how we keep track of our funds and find ways to recoup some of the costs through the various methods that are available, the various systems from FEMA and so forth that are available for funding emergencies. And we also saw the value of the hazard mitigation plan that Travis did a couple of years ago, led us through, that has positioned us now to get funding to fix a bunch of road problems that are going to help offset some of our costs on roads that we would otherwise had to pay for without it. So there's so much that an emergency manager can bring to this, and having the opportunity to have Travis expand his capabilities and responsibilities for general emergency management by being able to spin off some of the EMS stuff is a real value. So I anticipate being fully supportive of this recommendation. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, is there any way to get Travis a night off before hiring someone, or, you know, in lieu of hiring someone, or, you know, before it can actually happen? Because that seems pretty extreme that you don't have any time when you're not on call, especially with 25 volunteers out there. Is there anything we can do about that?
So I do have the 25 volunteers out there, but like I said, none of us are experts on any one field. And when we all come together and work together, that's when we do our best. And I do have the most experience that puts us ahead of the game in a lot of situations. Like I said, I hate talking about myself, and I absolutely hate it, but having those people there lend a huge hand and can get things done quick. I would say since I've come here, I've reduced the amount of time or the time that it takes to get a medevac plane here or get you into Juneau. I've been able to learn to get around some systems and do all that. And it's not that the volunteers can do that. It's also kind of like who I am and how I am. If I hear that tone go off or I hear stuff happening, it's in my blood to also go and help. Like that's just, when you decide to be a member of the fire department, that's just kind of who you are, volunteer or paid. You just wake up and you do what you have to do to help people when they're in need. Also added to that part, we've only had about 5 or 6 calls so far this year. And I would say about the first 3 that we had, they don't call 911. They call my personal cell phone or my work cell phone, and they ask for me to respond, to come and help them in whatever their emergency is. And when I tell them that I'm going to bring some volunteers and an ambulance, they kind of try to talk me out of it most of the time. And I'm not saying that they don't trust my volunteers, but they're asking for the professional help. And I'm, like I said, I'm not trying to talk down on any of my volunteers. It's just how it was, his name just left my mind, our last chief Manchester was. And then when Cassie had to fill in it was the kind of like the person in charge of EMS as a volunteer. That's what she had to deal with as well, and not get paid for it. So I really thank her for that time period, that short time period she had to do that. But it's just, I would love to take that day off, but it's hard to do it while I'm physically in town. It's just almost impossible. Thanks. Also, I love my job. So with that, I like to do what I do.
Thanks, Travis. Does anybody else have any questions for Travis about the EMS coordinator position? All right, that's great. At this point, I kind of have blabbed all I need to blab. And I guess I would open it up to the council to discuss either some of these new positions or just try to start making some decisions on some of these numbers, if we're comfortable with where they're at or if they want to be changed. In particular, I don't think there's anything to be done about this $99,000 until we learn more from the COVID-19 relief, but if there's any discussion about these tax projections, if we want to change any of those numbers, any discussion about the audit, whether to include that or not. I have us scheduled for an audit right now on the week of October 18th, but to secure that date, we need to sign a letter of engagement. And so I postponed bringing that forward or pursuing that route any further until we discuss tonight kind of where we are at. And then I can get back to the accountant and either keep us on the schedule or move us along. And I'd like to get a feel if we're finalized on this GVA number. And then of course the payroll numbers. Those are kind of the big items. And then anything else anybody wants to discuss. I did find the item I was trying to recall in my memory about GVA, and it's from the policy and procedure that is adopted for disbursement of room tax monies to the Gustavus Visitors Association. And you can see here in this full paragraph here at the top, the city council decides whether or not to approve the amount requested, and if the amount is more than 50% of the room tax total from the prior fiscal year, council may consider providing additional funding, and it would need to be approved via resolution. So there's the mechanism if we wanted to fund at the $40,580, since that's above 50% of the prior fiscal year, we would add a resolution to one of the meetings coming up. But that's all I have. Brittany, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Phoebe. I just had a question about the audit. When do we need to sign that letter of engagement for the October 18th date?
Well, I think he wants us to sign it like tomorrow, which I don't feel like we're going to be there. And so I would get back to them and just at least give them a feel on whether or not we think we're moving ahead with this or not. I'm comfortable with getting off the schedule again. Our main, I think the deadline for completing an audit is 9 months after the fiscal year ends. So if we did trigger the threshold, I think we'd have to have it completed by March of next year. The CARES Act funds have to be spent by the end of the year. So that's, I think, the more pressing deadline. But if they're just booking in October right now, then maybe there'd still be room in November or December by the time we were committed or not to, and knew more whether we were gonna meet the threshold. Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, I just appreciate you going through the budget and for all the people in the different departments talking about their priorities and new positions. Just similar to what we talked about in the capital projects, you know, it feels like we're coming out of a pretty lean year with still some uncertainty for the next year. And right now, you know, our expenses outweigh our income. And I just want to acknowledge it's a really difficult place to be as a council member right now, because all those positions sound great. And I can see that they're important to the different divisions. And at the same time, we have a tight budget potentially, or tight income coming in. And we have people, a lot of people in the community who really don't want to see a lot of government spending. So I'll be really interested to hear when the public provides input in a couple weeks. And I feel like, you know, for me anyway, that's going to have a big impact on how I would vote to, like, I'd love to see those positions move forward eventually. Maybe this year isn't the right year. As another alternative, I wonder what would happen if we gave each department the same amount for next year, but if they want to reorganize, they could, so that if you want to drop hours in one position to create a new one or rearrange things. I just think it's going to be a really hard sell adding three new positions in this particular year in Gustavus. It seems like people are going to have a lot of trouble with that. So, and the same with the GVA, you know, it seems like maybe the numbers for this year should be more similar to the last couple of years. It just doesn't seem like a good year to increase spending for any one thing. And then, you know, the audit is another thing, but if we need it, we need it. If we can delay it a year, you know, maybe that would be the good thing to do, and just hope that we generate more income this summer. Those are just my initial thoughts. Thanks.
Thanks, Tanya. Go ahead, Mike.
With regard to the audit, I think there's a lot to be said. If we can fund that with CARES Act money, then there's a lot of value to us to having an audit, especially if it is all paid for by CARES Act money. It's CARES Act funding that's pushed us into needing the audit, a single audit, as they're called, just due to our overall receipt of federal funds. In the next year, we may not have that much from CARES Act, and we may not have the opportunity of, you know, of using federal funding to cover an audit. We also may not need one because we just may not have that much in federal income. So if we can cover it with CARES Act funding, I like that idea. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. At this point, we do not have 30 grand left in CARES Act funds. We had tried to spend down those funds by the end of the year. And we also were not looking at hitting the threshold until we had the flood. And that is potentially releasing FEMA funds that is gonna be the bulk of what's gonna put us over the threshold. And then also with the extension of the CARES Act funds, We then had the opportunity to potentially reallocate some things to FEMA that we paid for out of CARES, but I don't have 30 grand that are FEMA eligible. I'm going through the process with FEMA right now. Maybe we'll get 10 grand covered. That would free up 10 or 15 grand of CARES Act funds to be reallocated toward an audit. It does not look like I'm going to get 30 through that route. And so that's why we had originally talked early on about saving 30 grand for an audit, but then it didn't look like we were going to hit the threshold. And so we spent the funds down thinking that everything I just explained, that the deadline was December 31st, 2020, and not knowing that we were potentially going to be receiving FEMA funds, which is also still very up in the air. So no, I don't have 15,000 or 30,000. I might have 15,000 freed up, but I don't know that yet until FEMA actually approves any reimbursements. So that's still up in the air. Go ahead, Joe Clark.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And thank you, Phoebe, for going over this budget with us. I'd like to take a moment and refresh our memories regarding our city budget. In September of 2019, the council passed resolution CY19-16. It was in response to a petition that had been circulated by the Gustavus Budget Watch Group and was signed by 152 Gustavus citizens. Basically, they were worried about the city spending more on payroll than it was taking in on tax revenue. The council at that time agreed to the request of the people that we would slow municipal growth and services by linking our growth to tax and fee revenues, and further that we would pass a conservative budget annually. We agreed to that. Our payroll expense budget right now is in the area of $400,000, but our total tax income is in the area of around $200,000+. Our actual expense for payroll through February this year so far is around $200,000. This much lower payroll number is because the fire chief and other expenses were paid using CARES funds. We have other forms of income, but it is clear to me that we are exceeding what our citizens want us to spend on payroll. Last year at this time, our council was presented with three fiscal COVID scenarios. Number one was high impact, hardly anything open. Number two, medium impact, several businesses open. And number three was low impact, a fully functioning year. The council agreed to move forward with number one, which was the highest fiscal impact from COVID. Our estimated tax income through February was $185,000, and we actually took in $195,000, $10,000 more. We did better than estimated because several tourist lodges, B&Bs, and charters did manage to have some season. We exceeded room tax as well. This year, it is my suggestion that we move to scenario two, or medium impact, where some businesses are open, but we still don't have a fully functioning tourist season. I believe that the people in our community want a conservative approach to the budget because the impact of COVID is still ongoing. We as city politicians seem to regularly increase our expenses without realistically dealing with our revenue line. If the city keeps increasing expenses, then we must increase revenue somewhere. Unless I am missing something, we have not articulated our alternative revenue sources. The danger that I fear most is that if we continue to overspend, then we will channel Gustavus into a different form of government that would force Gustavus into a first-class city structure that would take on paying property taxes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, Fee.
Go Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, sorry to jump in here. I don't have the thing on my screen to raise a hand, but I wanted to thank Joe for bringing that resolution up. Also wanted to point out that resolution also states that our annual budget, in our annual budget, we need to consider the potential for unanticipated reductions in revenue or increases in costs. And apart from this being a possible COVID fallout year, our federal government has printed in the last 12 months somewhere on the order of $6 trillion and given it away tax-free. And the ultimate result of that is likely going to be inflation. And to me, that's increase in costs that we can't predict right now, but we can anticipate it. So as far as these these extra positions that we're looking at, I think what Tanya said is true, that we need to think outside the box, come up with alternatives to some of those problems, because we can't really justify that with the way our economy is right now. And also on that that audit thing, I was wondering if it wouldn't be prudent to maybe put some money in an AMLIP account for a year or two, just so it doesn't hit us in the face every year that we have to come up with $30,000 if we want an audit. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Any other council comment or discussion on any of the specific items? I guess at this point then, maybe the next step would be to go through a few of these categories that that I mentioned to see if the council wants to adjust any of these numbers. This is kind of our last chance to work together as a group, unless you schedule another work session before the town hall. And so it would be good if we had adjustments we wanted to incorporate to try to get them in there tonight for the next draft of the budget. So when we release it out for everybody to review before the town hall. The first thing here is the tax, proposed tax budget. Do people feel comfortable with the numbers in here or want any of them higher or lower? It's kind of a middle of the road scenario, like you were mentioning, Joe, for the room tax. And it's a little more optimistic for the retail tax, but still not a fully open summer. So what would... Any thoughts there from people?
This is Joe again. That remote seller's tax, do you expect that to continue to increase?
I do, and it's kind of a wild card. I think more and more businesses are enrolling in it. I don't expect it to increase a lot more. I think that I would not want to go higher than 22 for that. I think it's been pretty steady over the last few months. And so I think we're starting to plateau a little more from where we were at the initial increases of businesses were, as it just got underway in Alaska and businesses were signing on. All right, I guess we'll leave those numbers like that for now.
Phoebe, sorry, could I ask a question real quick?
Sure, please.
For the room tax, it is true that we, for the folks that are lodging for more than 30 days, we collect the tax up to the 30 days, right? And then after that, it drops off.
No, you would think of it more like people renting homes here in Gustavus. You don't pay tax in those first 30 days. So it's just, if you're set up for a long-term rental, if somebody set up as a short-term rental and then exceeded the 30 days, then yes, that kind of a scenario might. So if somebody showed up here to work on a specific part of the project and then they ended up getting extended beyond that 30 days, then that would switch over and not be taxed. But generally, if they're set up for a long-term rental, you're not collecting any tax on that, just like anybody who lives here and is renting a home or a apartment or something.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
Moving down to the audit, we do have funds and savings we could always pull out for this if we wanted to, or we could always add it in as an NCO or something like that. I'm getting the sense that we're not ready to commit to this for the full 30K out of our own pockets. So my recommendation would be I would just tell the CPA we're not ready to commit and be able to touch base with them later this spring when maybe we have more information about what we're going to be taking in from FEMA or National Forest receipts and see where that puts us on the threshold, and just hope to get a date in before the end of the year if we have CARES Act money freed up that we could use towards it. And if we don't have CARES Act money freed up, then we're just doing it out of pocket anyways, and it doesn't matter if it just needs to happen before the end of next March. So does that sound good? We'll leave that out for now. I'm going to leave a note here just to remind us about it, but I won't add it to the budget at this point. What are people's thoughts about the GVA ask? Does anybody want to change that number or keep it at the full? Oh, go ahead, Tanya, I missed you.
That's okay. So the 99,000 you have for COVID relief, is that from the Great American Rescue Act or whatever just got passed? Is that a guess from that?
Yes.
Okay, and that is based on some kind of general idea you got. So yeah, I haven't heard anything what small communities are going to get from that, but that is kind of a wild guess or like kind of an educated guess?
It's kind of an educated guess that we received from the Alaska Municipal League, how they think those funds are going to be distributed when the bill was still, hadn't been signed yet. So it was from a couple of weeks ago. And it sounded like there might be going on some kind of formula like community assistance program is that's based on population and other things. But it still seems really up in the air. I'm hoping we're going to get a little more information tomorrow, especially on very curious about the amount and also very curious on what it can be spent on, what kind of
right. Yeah.
Things are going to be attached.
Right. So it might be worth, you know, just starting a little wish list for if it ends up being more than that amount, you know, maybe we could pay for the audit with that or give extra money to GBA or that kind of thing. But I guess I would be inclined, and I feel bad about this because GBA is great, but I would be inclined to just say, you know, 50% of what we got in the room tax last year, which would be, I think, 20,000 about, right? For GVA this year?
Yeah, so the formula for consideration is 50% of the preceding year. So that we took in the preceding fiscal year, we took in 78,000. So they're kind of asking for that full 50%. They're just over 50%.
Oh, what's
this fiscal year? We'll take in about 23.
Oh, so not
that's
last.
That's what we've taken so far this fiscal year. But that's not that's what it's based on. The
next year. I thought this fiscal year would inform next year. but no, it's 2 years before that.
It's the completed fiscal year.
Right. Okay.
But it's up to the council. The council's decided all different kinds of numbers, as you can see over the years. So.
Right. Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I guess I would just throw out there 20,000.
Any other council discussion for the GVA amount?
Yeah, this is Joe again. Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with Tanya there. I have trouble going with that full 40,000 because I don't expect the bed tax to be quite so positive this year. Maybe a little more than 20, but to go the full 40, that would say that we are expecting $1.2 million worth of business to come to Gustavus in order to receive some tax on it. So, I don't know, maybe 25 or something.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Yeah, this is a tough one too. I have to say, I so appreciate the work that the GVA has been putting into marketing our community through the pandemic. It's been really neat to come onto the council and have the GVA have a lot of new people come in and to see how things operate differently. And I have a hard time though with the full amount that they're asking for. Although I wish that was an easy answer, just to say yes, market the heck out of Gustavus. And so I think around 20 is too low, you know, because that would just essentially pay for their the salary of their folks and then leave nothing for marketing in their budget. So I was thinking around 30,000, just as a rough number. Thanks.
Any other council members have thoughts?
This is Phoebe, Joe again. Just one other consideration is we have so many laborers coming to town this summer with CCON and the Intertie. And I'm just wondering how many rental places are going to get used up for housing for those people and will not produce room tax after 30 days. It's just something to think about. Thanks.
Thanks, Joey. I definitely think that's a consideration and is a reason. I think that kind of economic activity will certainly help the retail tax side of things, but I think that's definitely a consideration for keeping this room tax lower, you know, than we might otherwise have. 40 is pretty, I think, is conservative, but for that reason that you're mentioning. Tanya, you had something?
Yeah, thanks. I feel the same as Brittany. You know, I really think GVA does a great job, but the reality is we are 50,000, well, 200,000, but we're not going to worry about the roads just yet. But, you know, $50,000 short of what we want to spend. And that's, wait, is that with the additional positions? It is, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Positions are in there. Okay. So it's got to come from somewhere. So I guess that's the, well, especially in light of what Councilman Clark said, reminded us about the 2019 resolution. You know, we should have our expenses be the same as our income. And I understand the road issue that we need to deal with, but at least seems to me at least $50,000 needs to come off this, off of our expenses for next year. So it's just a matter of where. But that was a long way of saying I could go with 30,000 to GVA, but then where it, so that saves 10,000. So where's the other 40,000 going to come from?
Thanks, Tanya. Joe Clark, did you have a comment?
I just agree with the mayor. I think that 30,000 is a more reasonable number under the circumstances. Thank you.
Okay, thanks everybody. I'll change that to 30,000 for now. Switching gears just briefly, Councilmember Buckeye was unable to attend tonight, but he did have a couple comments he wanted brought forward. And I don't know if these went out to the council or not, so I'll just read them really quick. For staffing, he said, I support the staffing requests made by the departments. However, if not all staffing needs can be filled, I would prioritize the EMS coordinator position, as this department has the greatest need for paid staff, with only one existing paid staff person currently. And the multiplier effect of having a staff person to coordinate volunteers is a good investment. And then for revenue, he wrote, road maintenance expenses seem unsustainable in the near-term future. Unreliable national forest receipts from the federal government and our expansive network of roads calls for more sustainable funding solution. I'm supportive of a tax on fuel to create revenue specifically designated for road maintenance. It's like the federal fuel tax, money paid that goes right back to supporting infrastructure we all use. As many forms as this could take, but some form of revenue needs to be discussed to provide for sustainable road maintenance funds into the future. I just wanted to make sure those comments got included this evening also. So then I guess we should circle back around to payroll again and discuss where what folks would like to see happen here. I think we have kind of two things to discuss actually. We have kind of a near-term, more pressing decision to make so we can figure out staffing with Jen's departure coming up soon, and whether how the library should proceed with either bringing new position descriptions before the council at the April meeting or filling the position with the existing position description that we're operating under currently. So I guess that's the first kind of guidance that we need from the council. Go ahead, Mayor.
Thanks. I really appreciate Michelle thinking ahead as far as the flow of the library. Although I'm sad to see Jen leaving that position, if we wanted to restructure the library, I think now is the best time to do that. And that would save that's a little bit of money in the long term. So if we do move ahead with considering another position for the library, I would like to see that alternate scenario go forth. But I'm looking forward to seeing what the general public has to say about that. And as far as adding more staff onto the payroll, this was something that I've been thinking a lot about. So I met with all of these departments except for the DRC, although I know that the DRC operator position has been needed for a long time, as Paul is close to retirement, and we want to see that space function like we know it has been. And but I did have a really nice conversation with Travis concerning the EMS coordinator and Jen and Michelle about the library needs. And it's tough to have to pick and choose or get creative with things. But as I see it right now, of course, I'd like to continue the conversation and see how we can get creative. But I would be most in favor of the EMS coordinator. I feel that a lot of the similar mentions that Councilmember Buckeye had stated, and if I'm being totally honest, I worry about the mental and physical health of our fire chief. He works really hard, and if we can relieve him of any of that stress and heaviness of the job, I'd like to see us try to do that. Thanks.
Go ahead, Tanya.
I guess, and I understand that, but in light of what the resolution that Councilmember Clark brought up, we have to raise taxes to make new positions, right? Is that, unless I didn't, and I haven't seen the resolution, but that's the way it read to me, that we have to be able to pay for our own people with our revenue. So are we going to consider, and I love the idea of a gas tax to pay for road maintenance, but that's a whole separate deal. I mean, we need that as well. Thank you, Phoebe, for putting that up. So I guess, yeah, thinking of for three new positions or even one full-time position, I'm just not sure that's a measured approach. And we're not coming up with any new revenue to fund it. So, but again, I'm really interested to hear what the public has to say about it. Like, because ultimately, is it worth it for them to pay more taxes if that's what is needed to fund these positions?
Thanks, Tanya. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, we don't have to. We have to balance our budget. And if we're getting growth in income, like we generally have had over the years, except for the COVID pandemic issues, then we can fund more services without raising the tax rate. And so I would certainly hope that we don't have to increase taxes unless we get a fuel tax or a carbon tax of some kind like that to support road maintenance. But if we can continue to get a growth in income in revenue, tax revenue, just due to the growth of our economy and inflation in the economy, then we don't have to change the tax rate at all. And so I think our target should be to try to balance the budget, certainly without getting anywhere near where we're running out of funds and we have to raise taxes. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Any other council thoughts?
Yeah, this is Joe again. I was agreeing with Tanya there that I don't see any way that we can take on three new positions like this because they're permanent. Then there's just no end, and then all the extras go with it. It increases our payroll $100,000 or more than that over last year, And I know that that not all of that is designated for those three positions, but most of it is. And I think we're going to have to find some alternative answers. I think the library needs to tap the volunteer force of this town and just have an understanding that if they can't make it, they will arrange for some other volunteer to do so. That's how it worked for years with the community chest, and they didn't have too many problems. The EMS coordinator, I think, is unrealistic. What Travis was saying, to find somebody with that kind of experience and action in their job to move here with the kind of action that we have. And I mean, it's a full-time position. It just doesn't seem realistic to me. And maybe there's an alternative where a part-time person could work, but they won't have that kind of experience. They'll have to work into it somehow. And I don't know what to say about the DRC. I think he's always been looking for someone to look at it as a career, and that will probably go on. But anyway, that's my comments for right now. I'm wondering too, Phoebe, if we have to decide on this now, or do we vote on alternatives or whatever individually in another meeting? I don't see how we can just vote on a budget like this without line items. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, we're doing exactly what we need to be doing right now. You what happens is we generate with the mayor, the best budget we can come up with, and include the request from staff. And then you guys have the hard job of saying no, basically, and making it all kind of balance out. And so we're doing exactly right what we need to be doing, just been discussing it right now. I don't expect us to resolve anything tonight, or concretely resolve anything tonight. And then we'll people will continue mulling it over, talk with your fellow citizens. We'll have the town hall and go through it all line by line again, and get input from the town then also. And then we'll have our April work session for the general meeting, where we'll also, I'm sure, be finalizing budget items. And then again, we'll introduce it hopefully at the April meeting. It gets introduced as a non-code ordinance, an NCO. So you have an introduction one meeting and then a public hearing, a different meeting. And what we've done the last few years, maybe not last year because it was so crazy, but the years before that, is we've introduced it in May, and then in April, and then we have reintroduced it in May with any of those last minute insurance numbers or other tweaks that have come through or other decisions that are made. And so that's kind of the final version that we're trying to get to, is that May version, with our best guess before that for the April version. And so we're doing just what we need to be doing right now, is just kind of going through it and discussing it and figuring out, you're gonna have to cut things or fund things from savings. That's where we're at with our current one, and just weighing those things and trying to come up with creative solutions like you're doing. Go ahead, Joe Clark.
Thank you, Phoebe. I have a question about the surtax on fuel that was set aside last year because, it was lack of community support. It was my understanding that the tax could not be targeted at one particular thing like roads. It would have to go into a general fund. Is that correct?
That is correct. Based on our code, that it would go into the general fund. The council could certainly plan to earmark it for roads, but you can't. I don't think they can directly tie a tax to a specific line item, and that came out. It was up for public hearing in April of last year. It was just not a time it was not the time for it. It's still available on, we had introduced it as part of an ordinance change, and it's still available in the April 13th packet for people to look at. But that, I'm not sure people would have interest in that right now either, but I think it is something to still consider for the future for trying to figure out our roads funding.
Thank you. Fuel prices are going up.
Thanks. Tanya, you can go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So, wonder, could we ask the departments to say their scenario that they would suggest if they got the same amount of money as last year, so no increase, you know, how they would do that with different hours and different positions. You know, maybe at the DRC, you could get a halftime operator to just kind of ease into the position and still be learning, but not working so much to save money. I know in the past, the city administrator position was, I think, halftime, and now it's three quarters time. You know, what is that? If each division could take a stab at how they would arrange things with no increase, and like the library, a new direction of two new positions, but could they do that with the same amount of money? And then if we had that available for the public to comment on, if they'd rather see increased services, you know, do you want the library open 20 hours a week? Or if you don't want to fund this, it's going to go down to say 15. And do you want to be sure that there's, you know, a trained expert in EMS that can come to your house? This is how important it is for people. It just seems like having two alternatives, like this is kind of the ideal scenario. And then the other one would be like a make do of with the same amount as last year. And then, you know, from which the public and we as the council can kind of compare those two scenarios.
You certainly could ask that of the departments. I would have to say that my experience talking to people is that every single one of us is maxed out, like 110%. I don't think anybody has hours they can give up unless we're going to change how we're operating. People are working really hard, and people are just on the treadmill on the high level. So I think if you wanted to keep things, I expect what you would hear is that we would just fund the positions like we did last year. But it's certainly worth asking to see if people have creative solutions. To try to squeak other positions out of it. The problem if it's a regular position is you have the whole benefit package, and so that really is a chunk of money to try to be flexing in just by reducing someone else's hours.
Right. So maybe seasonal positions, or or what services? I mean, that's what we have to clearly articulate to the community and ourselves as well, as if we don't fund these positions, what services are we losing, or how can we make all our city positions reasonable tasks so you're not, you know, going full tilt 110%. So it's like just a regular job. So how are we growing? It seems like almost like the city's growing too fast for its staffing. And so we need to either increase the staffing, or we need to curb the growth somehow, or make some limits or something like that. Or give up, or we need to give up some services that people like in this town.
Mike, go ahead. We can't hear you, Mike. I'm not sure if your hand's left up from before or not. There you are.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know you'd called on me. Yeah, I just wanted to say Tanya's hitting the nail on the head here. You know, people want, people want services, and those services in a government, and especially a municipality, are performed by people, and we have to pay people to do them. And so it's, I think part of the issue here is getting some feedback from the public. Are you willing to pay for the services that you want to have? And even the, we don't have employees doing road maintenance other than the support functions for it that the city administrator does and the treasurer. But that's still done by people and it costs money. So all these services cost money, and people have got to be willing to ask for less services if they don't want to fund the people to do them. Thanks.
All right, well, thanks everybody for that discussion. I think we can do two things to move forward on this. I can toss it back to the departments to see if they, with a static budget, if they would like to restructure it in any manner. And then we can also keep mulling it over and bring it forward to the community at the town hall with a similar kind of discussion on what these positions would be and the need for them if we want to continue providing our level of services or improved services. Does anybody have final thoughts on this? Go ahead, Tanya.
I just have a question. If we wanted to resume the discussions of the gasoline tax, would that be important to do before? It seems like that'd be important to do before this budget is finalized, right?
Not necessarily, because that's just coming out of savings. So it's not going to change our bottom line with the way we're currently running it. But yes, okay. If right. We want to take advantage of the summer season when, because it's a seasonal tax. That's right. Why we had introduced it mid-spring. We introduced it in March of last year to try to have it in effect in time for the summer season.
And then it got dropped because of the pandemic. Is that what happened?
Exactly. It got dropped because of the pandemic. It didn't seem like an appropriate time to be applying an additional fee to anybody.
Right.
Businesses or residents or anybody.
I guess I'm just interested to hear from other council members if there's interest in resuming this just as another effort to, just be within our... spend within our tax base. It seems like it makes a lot of sense to me to use gasoline money to fund roads. Does anyone else have any thoughts? Are we interested in picking this up again for before the summer season?
Yes, this is Brittany. I am.
Mike found a thumbs up. That's cool. Tom,
did you want to speak to that?
Yes, thank you. I think Toshua gave us some idea of what the amount of money we could actually see based on the amount of fuel that would be going through the gas station. remember the proposal didn't include heating fuels. We were trying to limit it primarily to vehicle type fuels, gasoline and diesels. And if I remember correctly, we would see something in the neighborhood of $30,000 in additional revenue from that tax. I think that was a pretty close guess. Obviously, that's a far ways from our road maintenance requirements. And it is something, but if we're looking at making a big impact to our road budget, that's not going to be the solution. It'll help, but I don't think it's going to give us what we need in order to address our roads issue. And we also looked at maybe a head tax for the day ships going into Glacier Bay or utilizing the city float out front. We could revisit some of those discussions. Not that those are all going to bring in all that much more money. I think this is kind of a unique year, kind of a bridge between last year and a normal year. And hopefully next year, as we look at the budget, we'll have a better revenue source. Also that fuel tax, I think we were talking about doing it seasonally. So it may not produce that quantity of revenue we're hoping for. That's all I had. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. I think there's a whole host of ways you could think about generating revenue, and I think it's more important to see if there's an appetite for services, I guess, and then you could figure out the revenue side of things. I believe that the reason we went from a 2% sales tax to a 3% sales tax was to hire a full-time fire chief salaried, as opposed to piecing it together or volunteers and things like that. So that has been done in the past. Many other communities have a lot higher room tax than we do. Many other communities have an alcohol or tobacco tax. There's all kinds of things that could be pursued, but I think it's more determining if the city residents want the services. I think with the current situation, it's March in Alaska after a year of a pandemic, but I think there is a risk of burnout for a lot of different members of the employee staff right now. And I think that'll ease up as the pandemic eases up and our lives get a little more normal. But I think these positions being brought forward have not been brought forward lightly. They're definitely departments seeking different solutions before burnout is occurring, and so that we can do our jobs better than we feel like we can do right now with our current staffing and budgets. So the town hall would be a good place to feel that out. And like Tom said, it's also kind of a bridge year. So maybe some things get set aside for a year and additional revenue sources aren't considered this year either, but it's something we take up again next year when our economy is feeling healthier and discuss it again then. Any other thoughts on the payroll tab?
Yeah, Phoebe, Joe again. I'm kind of leery of putting too much hope into the town hall thing. You know, we'll get a few people responding. We may get a few letters to the clerk if we put this out there, but I'm quoting a little phrase from the beach development plan from a couple of years back. that was based on the appropriate to the collective desires of the city as citizens of Gustavus. And that's a pretty tall order. And I don't know how to get there other than through a survey or something on the ballot in the fall. I hate making important decisions that could end up being divisive just on the few people that write or phone in. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. That's a good point. And that's part of the reason we try to get the, we'll get the budget out here before the town hall for people to look at. And part of the reason we try to get that out on the streets in April as a mostly finished product so that people have a full, people who are interested have time, more time to be able to delve into it and ask questions and provide input to the council for those decisions. But yes, I mean, it's the age-old problem with all kinds of government is getting the participation so that everybody is heard and this decisions can be made that way. I'm feeling like we're probably running out of steam on this particular topic for tonight, though. Are there any other items in here that people want to go over or discuss and make any changes to before we have a product we're going to put out for consideration for the public to start looking at and discuss at the town hall? Okay, Madam Mayor, do you want to go over anything additional, or are we going to call it good for tonight? What are your thoughts?
I didn't have anything additional, but I did want to thank the council and Phoebe, the treasurer, for this meeting. I feel like I wasn't really sure how it was going to go just because of the interest of new positions, but I feel like we've generated some really good conversation, and I am pleased to see so many members of the public. And I really hope that you advocate for what you believe is best for our city. So I look forward to hearing from all of you. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Madam Mayor. I think that we'll call it a wrap for tonight. That was awesome. That's totally what we needed to get done tonight. We're in really good shape. Hopefully we'll learn some more information tomorrow about what might be coming out of this new relief bill that's been passed and how that might impact this year's budget or next year's budget and the timing of when some of those revenue streams might come out and what their values are and uses. I'll put together, as we gather a little more information, I'll double check a repair and replacement fund and the utilities generally to make sure those are on track for being good numbers. And then this will go out again. I'll send out to council and staff here shortly once I get that done. So you have the revised numbers, and then it'll go out in a packet before the town hall. Probably on Wednesday, March 24th, and then the town hall is on Monday, March 29th at 5:30. And that'll be a Zoom meeting also. So we'll just have people taking, we'll do a presentation kind of like tonight where we go through the numbers and then have discussion and take questions after that. So I really appreciate everyone's time and thoughtful consideration. I know this is, it's not as hard as last year, but it's not easy when we're still coming out of this pandemic year. So I appreciate everybody's consideration and listening to staff, especially discussing the departments. So I think that's all for tonight, unless anybody has any final thoughts.
Thank you, Phoebe. Thanks, Phoebe.
All right, thank all of you. I think we're done for tonight.
Night, all.